For FM, the actor Alan Cumming continues to read from his moving memoir, Not My Father's Son. In today's episode, Alan is taking part in the TV series, Who Do You Think You Are? He hopes to find out the truth about his grandfather, Tommy Darling, who disappeared from his mother's life when she was eight. Meanwhile, Alan has been hit by a bombshell that he can't reveal to the television crew. His estranged father has announced Alan isn't his son. First of all, a recollection from his troubled childhood.
It was between Christmas and New Year, and everything was quiet and white. My mum and I were watching TV. Suddenly, the front door was thrown open, and I managed to catch a glimpse of my father staggering slightly. He had obviously been drinking. Just then, Tom arrived home. "Get upstairs, boys," my father slurred. We tried to occupy our time, reading and messing about, but we were both silently agitated about what was going on downstairs. "Boys, tea's ready." Mum sounded fine, in control even. We entered the kitchen and both stopped in our tracks. My father was seated at his usual place at the kitchen table, but he was leaning forward, head and arms sprawled across the tabletop. He was out cold. And my mother had set the table for our evening meal around him. "Come on, it's all right, he won't wake up," said Mum, sensing my anxiety. "Your father doesn't seem to be hungry, but we all need to eat." After a while, I began to enjoy this Alice in Wonderland experience. Sitting at that table night after night was terrifying. It would be again tomorrow, no doubt. But tonight, with my father snoring and us passing the biscuit plate over his head, we could breathe easy. Later, my mother suggested we drive to Dundee to see the new film everyone had been talking about, Jaws. The idea that we would be going off to do something as luxurious and rare as driving all the way to Dundee in the snow to see a movie was exciting enough, but to do so as our father lay snoring in the darkness of the kitchen unaware was simply beautiful. Tom asked if he could cycle to Maniki to see his girlfriend instead of coming with us. Mum agreed. It seemed anything was possible tonight. We set off in the car, and after a few minutes, Mum spoke up. "Alan, what would you think about you and me and Tommy living on our own?" I felt as if the heavens had opened and there was light and warmth and goodness pouring into the car. I felt God. It was as if the whole world had changed. "Away from Dad, you mean?" I just wanted to be sure. "Yes, away from Dad. Would you like that?" "Yes," I said, a tear plopping down my cheek. "I would like that." Suddenly, the car hit a patch of ice and we were spinning madly out of control. I thought we were both going to die. The God I had glimpsed moments ago turned out to be not so benevolent. He was an angry, vengeful man of a God, and my mum had dared to cross him. By the time the car had stopped, we were facing the way we had come. The engine was off, and I could only hear our panicked breathing and my heart beating wildly in my little bony chest. After a few moments, Mum asked if I was okay, and I whispered that I was. She started the engine, and we went on our way again, but quietly and meekly now, all triumph and elation gone. The matter was never spoken of again. Then, when I was 19, my mother finally left my father. Of course, I knew it was a positive thing for everyone concerned, especially my mum, but it really did come as a shock to me. I was terribly upset. Not so much about the actual breakup, more due to the recognition of how much of my youth had been spent vainly wishing for it to happen. Tuesday, 25th of May, 2010. When I arrived with the film crew at Mary Darling's house, She was a little nervous. She spoke of how little she knew of her father. She knew he had been a motorbike courier in the Cameron Highlanders during the war, and she proudly showed me a medal he had received for bravery in the field. I had seen it as a child, but knew nothing about when or why he'd been recognised in this way. A couple of hours later at the National Library of Scotland, I was poring over Tommy Darling's military records with a military historian. I learned that the Cameron Highlanders had a reputation for being a very loyal, closely knit group of soldiers. Thinking back to the fact that my grandfather had been an orphan, I thought perhaps he was looking for a family in the military. A lump formed at the back of my throat. Wow, this was going to be harder than I thought. Thursday, 27th of May. Lille, France. I was waiting in a flat, open ploughed field for the crew to set up. Standing next to me was a little historian called David, who was itching to tell me the story of the day Tommy Darling earned his medal. Finally, David told me the Cameron Highlanders were defending the village of La Bessée against the Germans, and my grandfather's role was to carry messages and orders from the battalion base to the company who were ahead, closer to the battle. But that wasn't all. I read from the book David handed me. The forward companies were supplied with ammunition by the work of Lance Corporal Darling, who, on his motorbike and laden with ammunition boxes, made repeated journeys along the fire-swept road. And then came the final blow. David told me that as the Germans surrounded the forward post, Tommy must have realised that there was nothing more he could do to help his battalion, the men he had thought of as his family for 7 years. "And they are trapped in La Bassée," I said, the full horror of the situation dawning on me. "They're either trapped or they're dead," David said bluntly. Tommy Darling was one of only 79 out of 800 Highlanders who answered the roll call when they returned to Britain. The citation for his medal in Tommy's regimental records read, "Lance Corporal Darling showed the greatest courage and disregard for his personal safety in getting messages through to the forward companies." When I got home, the DNA test box was sitting on the dining table. This was it. I was taking a test to see if my father was telling the truth and my mother had an affair and I was the outcome. I couldn't imagine why my father would lie about this, but I also knew I had never been able to trust him. I put a swab of my saliva in a little test tube, put it in the box and sealed it. Tomorrow morning it would be winging its way to some lab, and I would be winging my way to meet another boffin who is going to tell me the next instalment in my grandfather's story. Friday, the 28th of May. When I arrived at the Imperial War Museum, I was introduced to Professor Edgar Jones, a historian and expert on military psychiatry. He told me that there was no way my grandfather could have come through his war experience unscathed. After France, the Highlanders were sent to India, where they faced the Japanese army at the Battle of Kohima. Tommy Darling was wounded and admitted to hospital after this battle on 18th of May, 1944. Then Edgar came to the gap in his record of service between 1944 and 1946. "You may have heard of the word Dulali, which derives from Deolali in India. We've been wondering whether, in fact, Tommy goes to a psychiatric ward within the general hospital at Deolali." Oh, poor wee Dulali Tommy Darling. It all started to click into place. Tommy Darling, the fearless daredevil of war on two continents, who had seen his fellow soldiers, men who were like his family, die around him, had slipped through the cracks of sanity and gone under. When I was 28, I had what I have come to describe as a nervous breakdown. I think about it as that box in my attic. Our parents' house was a silent one, Partly that was due to not wanting to risk our father's anger, and so not speaking at all was a safer option. But also, we never discussed what we were going through, how it was affecting us. As our silence grew, so did our denial. Eventually, of course, we all escaped him. We all stitched together facades that we were all okay, fine, normal. Of course, we weren't. The thing about boxes full of denial and years of unresolved pain and hurt is that eventually they explode. My box began to burst in 1993. I had been married to my wife for 7 years and we had decided to try to have a baby. Suddenly, the idea of being a father and what that actually means began to fill my head, and my own experiences with my father flooded my mind. Then, around the same time, I began rehearsals to play Hamlet. As I got deeper and deeper into my work, I came to understand that Hamlet really didn't want to be there. He wanted to be absent. I decided that there was no way Hamlet was mad. He was slipping into the same deep water as me. He was at the start of a nervous breakdown too. I pushed my friends and my wife far away. I began to wonder what kind of father I would be. I had seen and read enough about psychology to worry whether I would just become my father. And the more I allowed myself to remember what that actually was, the more anxious I became. Ironically, my career was taking off in a way I could never have imagined. I began rehearsals to play the MC in cabaret during the day whilst performing Hamlet at night. It was creatively amazing, but I was feeling more unhappy, anxious, and out of control than I ever had in my life. I began to stop eating. I cried a lot. By the time cabaret ended in the spring of 1994, I was a zombie. I went to work, but I spent most days in bed if I had no appointments. I was in a deep depression. I knew that my depression was due to my past and my father, but I just didn't dare to delve any deeper into it because I was afraid I would be utterly unable to function. I was offered a film in Ireland and I leapt at the chance. This gave me the ability to have time to myself, to think and to sort myself out. The movie was Circle of Friends and became a very happy respite from my funk. But I didn't sort myself out. When I got back to London, I moved out of my marital home and took a little flat in Primrose Hill. I stopped working. I wanted no distractions. I wanted it just to be me with my memories. Finally, the box in my attic had exploded. Now, 17 years later, I realised both Tommy Darling and I had suffered from a form of post-traumatic stress disorder. We both had gone under, slipped through the net for a while. I got home from filming Who Do You Think You Are and broke down in tears. I was totally exhausted. This week had been the most insane of my entire life. Now, for the first time since this all started, I was able to let go and breathe a sigh of relief because I knew I wouldn't have to gird my loins for any more revelations, at least for a while. The DNA test results would arrive back in London the following week, but by then I would be in Cape Town, returning to my role in a miniseries as a transvestite nightclub manager called Desiree.
Alan Cumming continues to read from Not My Father's Son at the same time tomorrow. The abridger was Sarah Davies and the producer was Elizabeth Allard.
This Friday, over on BBC Radio 6 Music.
I am a key of life. Who we were, are and can be.
A key to let your imagination fly.
A key to knowledge, sharing.
A key for pleasure, for freedom.
6 Music's Steve Lamacq is let loose in the British Library for a radio first and gets to unlock the hidden gems within the National Sound Archive.
Opened by me, a simple key. Your library.
Discover modern music artifacts from The Who, Beatles, Patti Smith to the world's first ever sound recordings. Friday at 4 p.m. on your digital radio as part of 6 Music Celebrates Libraries.